A sepia-toned aerial view of soundstages, shimmers, and waves, rotating to become a golden WB within a shield-shaped frame set against the cloudy blue sky. On an encircling gold band, the words Warner Brothers Pictures, and below, a Warner Media Company. A yellow eye is revealed to be that of a lion, its head circled by a ring of film, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Text appears. Warner Brothers Pictures and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures present. A black and white photo shows an aging, bespectacled man.
Carl Sagan once said that human beings are like butterflies who flutter for a day and think it's forever.
Images of people blur by and butterflies flit among flowers.
13.8 billion years ago, the Big Bang created the stars, the planets, the galaxies. Observable fact, rational thought, pure science.
A telescope hovers in outer space.
Perfect.
The sun rises over the Earth.
The Big Bang also led to my home.
A tilted aerial perspective frames a sprawling city.
New York.
Young children race giddily outside school.
A city filled with humanity. Dreams.
A curly-haired girl grins.
Loss.
Grave markers crowd a cemetery.
Love.
In a grainy home movie, a couple kisses.
The choice we make. The path we choose.
A curly-haired young woman scrolls through her phone in a library.
I always believed it would take a lifetime to understand the human heart.
She smiles to herself.
In the end, all it took was a single day.
Resting low on the horizon, the sun shines between rows of towering high-rises. A title appears. The sun is also a star. Now, a finger touches a yellow dot labeled sun on a wall-hung star chart. In an apartment filled with moving boxes, the curly-haired teen stares at the celestial poster. She knocks on an open bedroom door.
Dad? I gotta run.
Accept destiny.
Okay, I have my appointment at the immigration office at 8.
Don't put yourself through that, baby girl. Give it up.
We've been two lawyers. Tasha!
We've tried for too long, Natasha Kingsley. We leave tomorrow. We're going home.
But this is my home. New York is my home. I gotta run.
She slings a bag around her shoulder.
Have a good day at school.
Natasha steps away from the brownstone building. An aerial view shows a train moving along an elevated track toward Manhattan. Seated aboard a train car, Natasha gazes out the window, gray headphones over her ears. Against her cell phone's home screen wallpaper of constellations, the time reads 7:42 a.m. Clad in a turquoise and gold jacket, she races from the Borough Hall station subway stop, her curly hair bouncing above her shoulders. White capital lettering on the back of the jacket reads, Deus Ex Machina. Natasha descends a building staircase. In a crowded office, signage reads, Immigration Appointment Check-In, as various people wait their turn. Natasha jogs down a fluorescent-lit corridor before entering the office. As a wall clock strikes 8, she takes a seat across from a staffer.
Lester Barnes.
Natasha Kingsley. I set up the InfoPass appointment in order to retry my parents' case.
Everything's in this file.
Do yourself a favor. Let me read it.
Okay.
She studies Lester with darting eyes.
Okay, here we go. Father's name?
Samuel.
Your brother?
Peter.
Younger?
Peter's 11.
Was he born in the U.S.?
No, he was born in Jamaica. We moved in.
Any family members that are U.S. citizens?
No. I've looked.
When are you all set to leave?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Lester closes the thick file and straightens it atop his desk. Smiling, he stretches a rubber band around it.
Your case is no longer under USCIS jurisdiction.
What does that mean?
Your removal is final. Sorry.
He sets the file before her and averts his gaze.
So there's nothing you can do?
You know, I've been to Jamaica. It's a beautiful place. Everything there is ivory. You know, you're gonna be okay.
She puts the file in her bag.
Yeah, forget it.
Hey. You're going to Jamaica. Some people going to Gaza in here. Some people going to Syria, Afghanistan. You're gonna be okay.
She gets to her feet.
Everybody tells me that I'm gonna be okay, and I'm tired of it. Because I've been here for 9 years. I'm supposed to be going into senior year, focusing on AP Chem and college and all of that, but instead I am here. And this is the last place I wanted to be. This is the last place because this is my home.
Okay. I'm sorry, all right? Maybe there's something.
Lester opens a desk drawer. He offers her a business card.
Take this. It's a friend of mine. Does some pro bono work, Jeremy Martinez. He's a lawyer. Call him.
Natasha nods and shuts her eyes briefly. Later, she sits outside the building.
Hi, I'd like to set an appointment with Mr. Martinez today, please. My name is Natasha Kingsley.
What is this regarding?
Phone to her ear, she eyes the card.
My family is being deported tomorrow, and we need his help.
I'm sorry, Mr. Martinez is pretty booked today.
Listen. My family is leaving tomorrow. My family is leaving tomorrow. Can you please help me out? Can you please? Just this one time, I'm begging you.
Please, all my parents ever dreamed about was to bring us here.
Mr. Martinez's assistant sits at her desk.
Listen, I can give you 15 minutes at noon, which is his lunch. But that is it.
Okay, that's all I need. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Natasha lowers her phone. Now, grainy home movies play.
My parents both went to college in Montego Bay.
A couple dances.
They met accidentally during a tropical storm. He ducked into a clothing store for shelter, and she was the store manager, wearing a name tag and looking official.
Patricia.
She never thought she could fall for such a romantic. But he was always reaching for the stars, even if he had to fight to reach them.
An image shows the Statue of Liberty visible through dense fog. Now, houses stand in a quiet suburban neighborhood. In a bedroom, a dark-haired teenager lies on his back, staring up at the ceiling.
진실을 담아서 부드럽게 흘러가라. 꼭 가야 할 곳으로 내가 갈 수 있게. Feels like I've
been here before. A stack of books includes titles by Emily Dickinson and Pablo Neruda. Images of Walt Whitman, Tupac Shakur, and Maya Angelou decorate the room, while a pinned-up quote reads, "To thine own self be true." The young man sits up and rubs his mouth before thumbing through a notebook. He grabs a pen, uncaps it with his mouth, and writes on a blank page.
Deus ex machina.
A subtitle, "Hey Teddy Bear, let's go." Facing a mirror, he fixes his unkempt hair and buttons his dress shirt. He moves a soccer ball back and forth with his foot.
Daniel,
it's almost 8:30. Come, eat. With the shirt tucked in, Daniel shakes at the waist and lifts his collar. He eyes his reflection uncertainly before knotting his plaid necktie. Retrieving his notebook, he puts on a gray suit jacket. In the kitchen, a middle-aged woman sets a bowl down as Daniel joins her for breakfast. So, what do you like to do outside of school? I volunteer at... Make eye contact. I volunteer at the children's hospital twice a month. Good. So, why do you want to be a doctor?
I want to help save lives and make the world a better place.
Not so fast. Pronounce your words clearly.
Today is so important, Daniel. It's the ticket to the rest of your life.
Daniel pauses, chopsticks in hand. Then a bare-chested guy enters.
I know him.
He puts on a t-shirt.
Looking like the 1%, little brother.
Dartmouth is a very good school.
Very good. Good morning.
Charlie,
aren't you late for work?
What? I don't understand what you're saying, Ma.
She eyes Daniel. You need to cut your hair.
Man, Dartmouth.
Dartmouth.
Good luck on your big interview. Well, it's all on you now, Danny boy.
그냥 아빠한테 가.
Go to your father. Don't be late. Jaw tensed, Charlie licks his fingers. As he tussles his younger brother's hair, Daniel jerks away.
1% of what?
Charlie leaves. Their mother spots a zippered pouch on the counter.
Charlie forgot deposit slip again. Charlie!
Okay, Oma. I'll take it to him and Appa.
After your interview, then straight to school. No friends.
I won't.
Do not be late.
Daniel exits through a screen door onto a porch where an American flag hangs. Wearing a backpack, he glances around, then steps away from the brick residence. His sneaker-clad feet propel him down the sidewalk. The image alternately brightens and dims as he proceeds through the neighborhood, tugging at his collar. A view glides past high-rises. Natasha strides through a bustling section of the city. Wearing her headphones, she waits on a subway platform as a train approaches. Now, standing on board, she drums her fingers on her leg and opens her eyes. In another car, a little boy resting his head on a woman's lap watches as Daniel twirls around a stanchion across from a bespectacled young guy.
Dude, I can't tell if I'm ripping too much in this song or not. You know, it's focus on the week.
I bet that we would fit together nicely.
Or,
I bet that we would fit together nicely.
Second one.
The second one?
Yeah, how you punch the wig.
Right afterwards.
Yeah.
I bet that we would fit together nicely.
You're gonna be the next big thing.
Man, I'm not the one going to Dartmouth.
Not in yet. Depends on today.
Yeah, you got to see.
Hope so.
The train slows to a stop in a tunnel. The lights flicker off and on.
MTA crushing it as always.
We got a train delay at 68th Street. We're going to be moving shortly. You might be panicking, but don't. Let me just say a little something for you. So I take my daughter to school every morning, me and my friend Levi. We got overly in a conversation.
Okay, we're taking the bus next time.
Kids late for school. We get down to the subway and we miss the train.
Shut up, asshole.
And that particular morning, it just happened to be 9/11. Had Levi made that train, he would have been the one that goes into Manhattan because he worked at the World Trade Center. What I'm trying to say is don't panic because of you being late. You never know why. You were meant to be here at this time.
The train resumes.
Grand Central Station, next stop, ladies and gentlemen. And always remember to open up your heart to destiny.
Now, a wall clock shows nearly 9:30 as Daniel and his friends stroll through Grand Central Station.
That was quite a story. Made me think, wow, he needs a therapist. You only got some time before work, so.
Windows, yeah?
Seen from above, commuters bustle around the ground floor. A view picks out a dark-haired woman bumping into a blonde as she hurries on her way. A white-haired businessman shifts on his feet, briefcase in hand. Three young people stand around, chatting. Silhouetted on a high walkway, Daniel and his friend people watch through windows.
His legs are the same size as the rest of his body.
Shit.
Oh, there's your future, right there.
What, that guy dancing right there?
No, you can't dance that well. The guy right there in the middle.
A balding man walks, his head bowed.
He looks like everything was going well in his life, and now, nope, nothing.
That's too bad. Poor guy.
A Buddhist cleric passes.
There's your role model.
The monk?
Yeah, the monk.
He looks happier than everyone else.
Yeah. I think we're missing something. Something's going on.
A view glides along the station. Beneath arrival and departure boards, the floor teems with foot traffic. Among the hustle and bustle of the harried commuters, Natasha stands, arms at her sides, staring upwards. Wearing headphones, she cocks her head. She breaks into a smile. Above, a rotating view reveals a section of the terminal's celestial ceiling, including Ares depicted as a ram. The view switches to a man's hand pointing up at the same section. It's Samuel Kingsley, who holds his little daughter aloft as he shows her the constellations. Still smiling, teenage Natasha gazes in wonderment, then shuts her eyes. In the flashback, her father keeps his gaze fixed skyward. In the present, as commuters hurry past, Natasha opens her eyes.
Wow.
From the walkway, Daniel stares transfixed.
What?
Her.
Down on the ground floor, Natasha grows misty-eyed.
She's just a cute girl, Daniel. I mean, okay, she's really cute, but...
No one ever does that.
What?
Look up. Everyone's so busy looking straight ahead, they don't bother to look up.
She turns her back and steps away into the crowd.
Holy shit.
What? Oh, where are you going?
Her jacket. Deus ex machina?
So?
I wrote it this morning. It's Latin for God from the machine.
I don't know what that means.
Open up your heart.
What? Sorry, what are you talking about?
Daniel, where you go? Daniel!
Open up your heart to destiny.
Daniel's friend follows him downstairs. The bespectacled friend leaps over a woman's rolling luggage as she drags it behind her. Arriving at the ground floor terminal, Daniel turns, nearly losing his balance. He and his friend pause, watching the crush of people. The perspective rotates, mirroring their gazes.
I can't find her.
Yeah, I don't see her. Wasn't meant to be. But hey, man, you tried.
I think I'm gonna see her again.
I don't think so, man. I'll text you after my shift, okay?
Wish me luck.
With the interview or the girl? Daniel, text me when you come back to planet Earth, okay?
Grinning, Daniel steps away from his friend. The view glides up to arched windows in the vaulted ceiling. Then a subway train blurs past. Seated aboard one car, Daniel absently twists a lock of his hair. Setting his notebook on his crossed leg, he stares down at the words, Deus Ex Machina, on the otherwise blank page as he twiddles his pen in his fingers. He lifts his eyes from the page.
The next stop is East Broadway.
Getting to his feet, he grips a chrome grab bar. Glancing into the adjacent car, he catches a glimpse of a gold jacket sleeve through the window. He peers intently through narrowed eyes. Another passenger steps away, affording him a clear view of Natasha. She takes no notice of Daniel. Daniel stares, mesmerized. While commuters file past, he continues to gaze into the next car. More passengers disembark, but Natasha is nowhere to be seen. Daniel wends his way onto the platform.
Excuse me.
He gazes around frantically before approaching the stairway to the exit.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Arriving on a landing, he frowns. A neighborhood teems with signs in Chinese, and cooked ducks hang in a storefront. Daniel emerges from the East Broadway station exit to see Natasha heading away down the sidewalk. A dark car drives past. In a doorway, a man reads a newspaper while two people chat on a stoop. Wearing headphones, Natasha continues on, while Daniel follows from a distance. Up ahead, the car makes another sharp turn. The speeding vehicle swerves out of the path of a pedestrian crossing the street. It clips a cyclist near Daniel, throwing the helmeted rider from his bike. Daniel stops to check on him.
You all right?
I'm okay.
Glancing up, Daniel sees Natasha approaching the end of the sidewalk as the car starts to take off. In the barricaded street up ahead, signs read road closed and detour with an arrow pointing to the intersection. Natasha continues on in slow motion, eyes fixed in a dreamy expression. Daniel bolts after her. The oblivious young woman prepares to step off the curb just as the car careens into the crosswalk. Her eyes go wide as Daniel seizes her from behind and pulls her down to safety. Her headphones and bag fall to the pavement. Then the hit-and-run driver speeds off. Natasha and Daniel lie sprawled beside one another on their backs. Natasha struggles to sit up. As Daniel scoots up, she rubs her neck.
What the hell?
She gazes past him to a crowd gathered on the sidewalk.
I'm so sorry. You okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that was close.
She retrieves her headphones and stuffs them in the bag. Daniel gets to his feet and offers his hand.
Can I help you up?
She grips it in hers.
Thanks.
Sorry about pulling you down. Can I ask your name?
Natasha.
I'm Daniel.
They shake hands.
You saved my life. Thank you.
He stares concernedly into her eyes.
Do you want to sit down?
Now, at a skate park, young kids ride their boards beneath the suspension bridge. Natasha folds her arms in front of her. As she catches Daniel staring, he quickly looks off. His gaze drifts back to her, and they both straighten awkwardly. Letting down her guard, Natasha ventures a glance at her rescuer.
I normally don't wear a suit. It's my alumni interview for Dartmouth.
No school today?
No. It's no school.
What's with the notebook?
Just poems.
Poems?
Yeah, I just dabble in it for fun. Not a big deal, really.
What are they about? Oh, no, wait, let me guess. Love.
Not all of them.
But most of them.
Yes.
Well, I don't believe in love.
It exists whether you believe in it or not.
And that's a provable fact.
Yeah, how could thousands of songs and poems be about something that doesn't exist?
Boy, please, words on paper.
What would convince you?
Well, if you can't use the scientific method on it, then it's not real. Anything in this world that's a fact, it's a fact because we can either observe it, measure it, or experiment with it. If you can't do any of those things, then it's legit, deadass, not real.
But you gotta admit people are feeling something.
Hormones. They're feeling hormones. And we just call it love so that we have something grand to live for. Otherwise, life seems really mundane and just a random series of events that you have no control over until you die. Depressing, right?
You make it sound depressing.
Because it is.
So no magic, no fate, no meant to be. What if I told you I could get you to fall in love with me, scientifically?
How is that humanly possible?
Just give me a day, one day, today.
I can't, I don't have a day.
Do you have an hour?
Natasha takes out her phone, glances at it for a moment, then puts it back in her bag.
An hour.
As he grins, she starts off.
I'm not changing my mind, though. Life is good,
who's asking? Daniel follows. Wearing earbuds, a tatted-up guy with a shaved head watches his fellow skaters. Meanwhile, at the Kingsleys, Patricia stands staring out a curtained window. Gathering up some clothes strewn atop a bed, she folds them anxiously. Seated on the bed, she gazes with distress. Natasha paces on a sidewalk, phone in hand, as Samuel talks on his phone in the apartment.
No, my appointment's at noon, and I'll be home right after that.
Your mother's worried sick. You have to come pack your
stuff. Dad, this lawyer might be able to help.
Stop being such a stubborn child and get home now.
Please, we have to do something. This is honestly our last chance.
Come pack your stuff. I'm gonna throw it all in the trash.
Will you please just listen to me for once?
A view glides past the wall of a cafe's dining room. Seated at a table, Daniel gazes through a window at Natasha pacing on the sidewalk. He licks his spoon before setting it back in his coffee cup.
Hello? Yes, this is Daniel. We're scheduled.
Tomorrow morning from 8.
Yeah, I think I can make that work. Uh-huh, see you then. Yes.
He smiles to himself and tugs at his tie as Natasha heads inside.
Hey.
What is that all about?
Just parents being parents.
She lifts the lid of a sugar bowl.
Loosened your tie.
Yeah. My interview got postponed to tomorrow. But back to love and science.
He eyes his phone.
So, this study had researchers put a bunch of couples into a lab and had them ask each other a series of intimate questions.
Sounds ridiculous.
At the end of the study, they had to stare into each other's eyes for 4 minutes without saying a word.
So you think you're gonna make me fall in love by asking me these questions?
Okay, so there are 36 questions.
Okay, so we're doing this.
But nobody's got time for all that. So how about I pick 10 randomly? Okay, question number one.
He sets the phone down.
What are the 5 key ingredients to falling in love?
This is so idiotic. Fine. Mutual self-interest and socioeconomic compatibility.
Okay. Well, my ingredients are friendship and chemistry.
Of course they are.
My last three are some sort of moral compass. Common interests are a must. And let's see. The X factor.
What in the world is the X factor?
Don't worry, we've got it.
You know what? I hate to break this to you, but taking this little quiz isn't gonna make me change my mind, Mr. Plaid Tie.
Did you just call me Pad Thai?
Plaid Thai!
Because not only is that completely racist, but also culturally insensitive, as my family is from Korea, not Thailand.
Well, that is not what I said, so you can stop waiting for an apology.
Oh, I'm waiting for something, but not for an apology.
As Natasha holds Daniel's gaze across the table, a smile comes to her face. On her phone, below the time of 11:30, a calendar reminder reads immigration lawyer. Natasha gets up.
Where are you going?
I told you I have a meeting.
She retrieves her bag.
We still have 27 minutes left.
Mm-hmm. So you coming or what?
They exit the cafe, the signage on its green awnings touting original cappuccino since 1927. Under bright sunlight, high-rises loom over the city. One skyscraper dwarfs Daniel and Natasha, who stand at the intersection of Broadway and Liberty.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Is that actually one of the questions?
I might be improvising.
All right, well, I want to be a data scientist.
What's that?
It's a scientist who analyzes data. We take large amounts of information and strategize on how to apply it practically.
Like how?
Like traffic flow, 4-day work weeks for big companies, personal time versus productivity, all that jazz.
You're passionate about it though, right?
Yeah, well, I'm passionate about walking on the moon, but I can't live off of passion any more than I can live off of love.
It's a long life to spend doing something you're not really into.
It's a long life to spend chasing dreams.
I should really kick it with my dad sometime.
Am I reminding you of a 50-year-old Korean man?
Without the accent.
So he's not crazy about you pursuing poetry?
Oh, no. I'm first generation.
And?
It means it doesn't matter what I want. According to my parents, I'm meant to be a doctor.
Oh, well, you know, at least when you're a doctor making bank, you can thank them for not letting you be a starving artist. It's hard to be passionate when you're hungry. This is me.
They find themselves in a plaza facing a high-rise entrance labeled 140. The building's gleaming glass facade stretches toward the sunny sky. Natasha stares at the imposing structure.
You're kidding.
Daniel shows her his phone.
This is where my interview was supposed to be.
What, honestly?
I'm serious. What are you doing here?
Personal.
Okay. But you gotta admit, this definitely proves my point. Faith is real.
Wait, I think you mean coincidences, because they can happen without meaning.
Okay. Okay. I'll wait here for you, and then we'll finish the questions.
Daniel, I should really go home right after this. Today's a big day. So I think this is where we say goodbye.
He purses his lips.
Am I gonna see you again?
The odds aren't in your favor. I'm guessing 1 in 8 million.
I really think I could have changed your mind if I had the whole day.
Too bad you couldn't prove your hypothesis.
He extends his hand.
It was nice to save your life, Natasha.
Nice meeting you, Daniel.
She shakes it.
You know, good luck with everything. Honestly, I hope the interview goes well. Figure all that out.
Thanks.
Thanks again.
With a slight smile, she starts forward. Daniel shifts on his feet and gazes toward the entrance.
You know, I'm gonna prove my hypothesis. Love is real.
Natasha turns around.
This isn't the last time I'm gonna see you. If I gotta hit up all the boroughs, we're gonna see each other again. You can't stop what's meant to be.
She steps through the revolving door. Now, a montage includes a photo of Daniel with Natasha.
The theory of multiverse was set forth originally by Hugh Everett in Quantum Mechanics. It posited that every version of our past and future histories exists, just in an alternate universe.
More photos show Natasha by herself.
This means that for every choice you make, an infinite number of universes exist where you made a different choice. In this way, we get to live multiple lives. I'm not quite sure which universe I'm living in now.
A close view of the iris of her eye morphs into a wall-hung clock as it strikes 12. Natasha enters the office.
Law offices of Jeremy Martinez. Perfect. Okay, thank you. Hi,
I'm Natasha Kingsley.
I was just about to call you. I am so sorry, but I have some bad news. Mr. Martinez was biking into work when he got clipped by a car. He was lucky. Just a few bruises. He'll be back around 4:30. Can you come back then? Law offices of Jeremy.
Of course,
Martinez.
Of course. Okay, I was supposed to help my mother, but I'll be here.
Great, I need you to fill these out.
I already have my case file.
You still need to fill these out. You can take a seat right over there.
Okay.
How can I help you? The forms are redundant.
Clutching a clipboard, Natasha plops into a chair in the waiting area. She reads a question on the top form.
Have you ever been convicted of a crime?
A sly smile plays across her lips. In a flashback, young Natasha and a friend race out of a bodega with candy. Natasha marks an X in the no box.
Are you willing to offer allegiance to the United States of America?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
She makes another X.
Have you ever been involved in anti-government activities?
Young Natasha and her peers march down a sidewalk, demonstrating for gun control.
What does America mean to you?
As she stares pensively, a flashback shows her hanging out with other teenage girls. Across the way, some guys check them out. Elsewhere, a vendor serves the Kingsley's flavored ice. Natasha samples some from her brother's cup, then her mom's. As a little girl, Natasha rests her head on her dad's shoulder. Placing his gray headphones over his daughter's ears, Samuel gives her a kiss on the forehead. Back in the present, Natasha flips the sheaf of documents over to the first page. Later, Mr. Martinez's assistant thumbs through the questionnaire. Under Natasha's gaze, she rests her chin on her hand.
We've had a lot of cases like yours recently. I think Mr. Martinez may be able to help you reopen your case.
Honestly?
I can't make any promises, especially these days, but be back 4:30 sharp.
Natasha steps off an elevator in the building and enters the lobby. She composes a text reading, "Mom, be home after 4:30, lawyer meeting. Looks good." She sends the message and gazes hopefully through the revolving door toward the plaza. Standing right beside her, Daniel leans in close.
Hey, Tosh.
Oh. Hey. Doing nicknames now.
Yeah. How'd your thing go?
I have to come back at 4:30.
I guess that just gives you 4 hours to just hang out with me or...
I mean, I should still go home.
Okay. Yeah. How long does that take?
45, 50-ish minutes.
One way?
Yeah.
That's like 2 hours. Just to be home and turn around?
Okay, you make some fair points. So?
I have this thing uptown. My parents.
Your parents?
Yeah. I just gotta drop something off. It's not a big deal at all. Do you wanna come?
A view glides past towering buildings. On a sidewalk, an elderly man chats with a guy in a Panama hat. Wristwatches sit on display in a jewelry store. Outside a shop, a woman deftly twists the little girl's hair into tight braids. Sunlight glints above the sign for the Apollo Theater.
I'm sorry.
For what?
I'm sorry this isn't exactly the sexiest first date.
Never agreed it was a date.
Oh, it is. You'll see.
I wish I could just bottle your confidence and sell it, because I'd make a shit ton of money.
I'm not that confident.
Okay.
As Natasha strolls past a storefront, Daniel stops and gets her attention. He points to a hanging sign reading, "Black Hair Care."
This is it?
This is your family store?
Mm-hmm.
Your family, the South Korean immigrants own a black hair care store.
Yes, my family of South Korean immigrants do own a black hair care store.
Passion project?
Seems random, but it's not.
Text reads 1960 South Korea.
See, in the 60s, wigs made from South Korean hair were extremely popular.
Archival footage includes a clip of the Supremes.
Around that time, the South Korean government banned the export of hair, making it difficult for anyone other than Koreans to make wigs. Then the US government banned wigs made from Chinese hair. This gave Koreans full control over the entire wig industry. And the wig business evolved into the more general black hair care business, which South Koreans currently control 60 to 80%.
Inside.
Aisle one is shampoos, conditioners, dyes, a bunch of other things I don't understand. Aisle three is weaves, wigs.
Wow. This place is huge.
Can I get you anything?
I think I'm set on gel, but thanks.
No, I didn't mean a product. My dad's got a fridge in the back with like soda. And
got it.
Okay. Stuff.
Yeah. Thanks. The soda would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Bottles of hair coloring line a shelf. Natasha selects one and studies it.
Pink?
Why not?
Doesn't seem like your style.
You never know what might work.
Mm-hmm. I think you'd look beautiful with a giant pink afro.
Well, not the whole thing, just the ends.
Cool.
Yeah.
Your hair looks really soft. You think you could take all that dye?
Well, huh? You're the black hair care expert, so why don't you feel it and tell me?
Really?
It's a one-time only offer.
Daniel gently runs his hand through Natasha's hair. As his fingers close around the springy curls, their faces begin to come together.
Oh, what's going on here?
As Charlie steps over, Natasha drops the bottle.
This is my older brother, Charlie. This is my friend, Natasha.
Friend? Oh. I thought maybe he's caught a shoplifter.
What did you just say?
Hey, we got a lot of those in a store like this, right? I'm sure you understand.
What the hell is your problem?
What?
What?
Oh, tough guy in a suit now,
Daniel,
huh?
Let's go.
Natasha leads Daniel off. Around the corner, a man with graying hair writes on a clipboard.
Oh. Wow. Look at some money, girl.
What are you doing?
Money pouch.
Daniel takes the pouch from his backpack.
Yeah.
What's this?
Moya.
Charlie forgot to bring it.
Hey, want me to translate for your friend, Danny?
Hi, Mr. Bay, I'm Natasha.
Mr. Bay scrutinizes the young woman.
You're a friend of Daniel's. Would you like something before you leave?
Or for free?
Charlie rolls his eyes.
Not this aisle. Come with me.
Mr. Bay takes a jar down from the shelf.
Oh. Relax it for your hair. Make your hair not so big.
Charlie snickers.
Thank you, Mr. Bay, but I like my hair big.
Oh, if you like big, you should get yourself a man, because little Danny here.
Yeah, because my dick is an inch long, still twice as big as yours.
I gotta go.
Come on, eh?
Cut it out.
You know, it could not have gone any worse.
Outside.
What a combo. I mean, maybe I should have gotten the relaxer just to make him like me more.
Natasha and Daniel amble along the sidewalk.
I'm glad you find this funny.
Dude, tragedy is funny. Sometimes you gotta laugh to keep from crying.
Are we in tragedy?
That's what life is. We all die in the end.
Natasha bites her lip and faces away. They come to a stop.
Hey. I'm sorry.
Daniel. I'm not your dad. And you're for sure not your brother. You shouldn't be mad at you because of me. You should be mad because you stole all the good looks in the family.
Daniel sheepishly shakes his head, and Natasha scrunches up her mouth.
Thank you.
I still have 3 hours.
So where to?
I have one of my favorite spots.
Okay.
In another neighborhood. They stop on a walkway facing a building's glass facade. Inside the museum, scale models of the planet surround an enormous sphere. Daniel and Natasha take a leisurely stroll past the exhibit, chatting as they go. The view slowly glides down from the pair traversing the spiraling walkway to a lower floor where an adult chaperones a group of children. A mounted black and white panoramic photo shows an astronaut standing on the surface of the moon. Studying the image beside Daniel, Natasha sneaks a glance at him and smiles. Now, Natasha runs her fingers along a giant black meteorite on display. Gazing from the other side, Daniel watches as her hand lingers on a craggy ridge jutting from the massive oval hunk of space debris.
Makes you feel minuscule and so important at the same time.
Passionate about it. You should be an astronomer.
Not
But really, though.
But you love it.
They share a momentary glance, then return their attention to the meteorite. Daniel traces his finger along the smooth, dimpled surface. An elevator ascends. On a dome screen, two celestial bodies collide in a shower of sparks. Seated in a theater, Daniel watches the film beside an awestruck Natasha.
Change is a constant in the universe.
They exchange a brief look.
Stars, planets, even galaxies are always on the move. Tug this way and that.
Natasha steals a glance at Daniel.
By the powerful, ever-present force of gravity.
Her fingers inch over and brush his hand.
At times, they even collide. This may sound alarming, but collisions can actually be beneficial, and sometimes beautiful.
Noticing his gaze locked on her, she turns to face him with a smile. As the bright light from the screen fades to a dim glow, Natasha traces a finger around Daniel's palm. While other spectators attentively watch the film, Natasha and Daniel stare deeply into each other's eyes. A view recedes from outer space, showing two warm, glowing celestial bodies in the center of a cluster of sparkly matter. Daniel's fingers curl teasingly over Natasha's, then he clasps her hand in his. On screen, a bright swirling galaxy passes gracefully through another. Natasha and Daniel head outside.
Okay. Next question.
Okay.
As they ride a subway train, Natasha clutches Daniel's arm and rests her head on his shoulder, a smile of contentment on her face. Later, she plays with a twisty lock of his hair and smooths it back. As he shakes his head, a floppy lock comes loose from either side over his brow. He feigns a seductive look, and Natasha breaks into giddy laughter. An aerial view between skyscrapers shows gridlock vehicles crawling like ants through the maze-like streets. On a bustling sidewalk, Daniel and Natasha saunter through the crush of pedestrians. As she flashes an effervescent smile, he points to a restaurant storefront filled with steam pots. Backlit by the halo of the sun, they pose for a selfie. Daniel stretches his arm to capture them from another angle. Lettering in Korean accompanies a sign reading karaoke.
Going?
Audubon.
In here?
Mm-hmm. Green karaoke.
No. I'm not doing it, Daniel. I'm not doing it.
Bright streaks of light glow on a monitor in a dimly lit private room where Daniel flips through a catalog.
You know, in Audubon, you don't choose a song. The song chooses you.
There goes that overly dramatic poet again.
Glad you recognize.
Yeah.
Natasha stands.
Do you know what I recognize? I recognize that almost every poem I've read is about three things. Love, sex, and the stars.
Stars are important. Didn't we just learn that at the planetarium?
Sure, but I don't know, why not more poems about the sun? The sun's also a star.
Just because it's the most important star doesn't make it poetic.
The sun is a benevolent star, a giver. It's our greatest symbol of hope. That's worth writing about.
Fine.
She retakes her seat.
I'll only write poems about the sun from now on.
Thank you.
And sex.
She grins slyly. Setting the catalog aside, he programs a media player. Then gets to his feet. He straightens his belt before removing his suit jacket and tossing it aside. He undoes the buttons of his cuffs and several on his shirt front.
Gotta be ready in case the song calls for it.
He grabs a microphone, then twirls and catches it. As he stands facing Natasha, the display of light streaks fades from the monitor. An intermittent crimson light pulses, alternating with the cool blue tint of the room.
Now I don't hardly know her, but I think I could love her. Crimson and clover.
Daniel stares intently over at Natasha. She gazes back enraptured.
When she comes walking over, I've been waiting to show her. Crimson and clover, over and over.
They lock eyes across the room, the blue and red light playing over their faces. Lips parted, Natasha grows misty-eyed. Now outside in a park, they embrace. Arms draped around Daniel's shoulders, Natasha beams.
Yeah.
Their lips meet. As their kissing grows more passionate, the view circles them. Now in a bedroom, Natasha takes her lips from Daniel's and smiles. He gives her a peck, and the room blurs past. Now Natasha strides into a classroom, its blackboard filled with calculations. As her peers look on, she unrolls a chart. Glancing off, she spies Daniel gazing over proudly. Then she holds up the chart.
The star explosion schematic view.
She turns it around, and the white backing becomes the white of her wedding veil as she and Daniel descend steps outside a columned municipal building. They smile at one another. Then the hazy sky above switches to a sunny sky over a tree-lined street. Natasha caresses her round, bulging belly as she and Daniel head down a concourse. Later, she cradles an infant in her arms, turning this way and that, while Daniel tries to get the baby's attention. Rocking their child in his arms, Daniel gently sways side to side. Natasha joins him as they dance, barefoot, atop a blanket stretched out over a grassy lawn. The same striped blanket covers Natasha, who leans against Daniel, the couple seated in beach chairs on a rooftop. Daniel caresses her shoulder as they gaze up toward the star-filled night sky. The blue of the heavens transforms into the blue light of the private room. Pinpoints of starlight descend past Natasha's face before fading away. Slowly drawing closer, Daniel gets down on one knee. She gazes at him, her eyes filled with longing. As Daniel blinks at her, she cups his cheek with her hand and kisses him. He scoots her up onto his lap, their hands eagerly exploring one another.
Today's not a coincidence. It led me to you.
Daniel reclines, with Natasha atop him. His hand slides down the small of her back, caressing her hip. Natasha's fumbling hand grabs her phone. The time shows 3:30, while the calendar reminder reads, immigration lawyer.
I'm gonna call her.
What's wrong?
These dreams are screwing up my entire life. I can't do this.
Natasha.
She hurries out.
Natasha, what's wrong?
Daniel grabs his suit jacket and backpack, then follows her down a corridor.
Natasha. Natasha. Just wait. Natasha. What just happened back there? Just talk to me.
What are you so afraid of? What are you so afraid of?
Of being late to my appointment.
Or are you afraid of this? I know this is real. And I know you feel it too. Tasha.
Daniel, I know you think that that us meeting were fate or destiny or whatever, but it can't be real because I'm probably never gonna see you again.
Facing her on the sidewalk, he stares incredulously.
What? Why not?
Because I wasn't born here, because my family's being deported tomorrow.
You're leaving tomorrow?
Yeah, for good.
He shifts anxiously on his feet.
You're just making it harder.
But there's gotta be something we can do. Just wait, just Natasha, just wait. There's gotta be something we can do. I'm right here. I'm not a dream, okay? I'm right here.
He stares into her eyes.
Stay.
Thank you for saving my life.
Natasha.
No.
Natasha!
Leave me alone.
I don't even have your number.
Natasha strides off. Daniel lowers his unblinking gaze, then bows his head and shuts his eyes. Natasha heads down a sidewalk, losing herself in the heavy foot traffic. Now walking alone, she drapes her jacket around her neck and closes her eyes, her face filled with regret. Daniel sits hunched over, staring forlornly. Leaning back, he heaves a sigh. A tilted, dizzying aerial view scans the blocks of towering skyscrapers in the sprawling metropolis. Wearing the open jacket over her gray top, Natasha pulls it tightly around her and folds her arms. She walks through the plaza toward the entrance of Mr. Martinez's building. Opening the office door, she makes her way down the corridor to his assistant's desk.
Hi. Perfect timing, Miss Kingsley. Follow me, please.
He's a little banged up after the accident, but extremely dedicated to his cases.
Mr. Martinez sits at his desk, sporting a finger splint.
Yep.
Mr. Martinez, this is Natasha Kingsley.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
They shake hands.
Thanks for squeezing me.
He winces.
No, it's okay. Please sit.
Scrapes cover his cheek and brow.
I've had a chance to review your file, and what I'd like to do is see the judge who issued this removal order, okay? I went to school with him. He's a good guy.
And he'll be able to stop the deportation.
Well, then he might let me file a motion to reopen the case, and then we can reverse this voluntary removal, all right? And then at least you won't have to leave tomorrow.
And I should have an answer from the judge in the morning, and then probably we should meet again. 10 o'clock, all right with you?
Okay, well, then what?
Well, then I'll ask for a new trial and submit a petition for permanent resident status. Okay? How's that sound to you?
Like somebody finally cares.
Meanwhile, traffic passes down a Harlem street. Daniel enters the hair care store, shirt wrinkled and suit jacket in hand.
Hey, you're back early. You finished with the interview already? What happened? You can tell me anything. Why the long face, man?
Shut up, Charlie.
So how did your fancy college interview go, Dr. Bay?
You finally got a doctor in the house. Someone to be proud of. Oh, come on, you really got nothing to say to me?
No, Hyung, I don't.
Charlie tugs on Daniel's backpack.
Hey, I told you not to call me that.
Oh shit, you're right. Someone might find out you're actually Korean.
Charlie looks over his shoulder.
You that little black girl made your balls grow, huh? Oh no, you're the little bitch who can't think for himself without their approval. Yeah, that's what you are.
The brothers stare each other down.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry not everybody can be as badass or edgy as you.
Staying at home, eating their food, breaking mom's heart? Fuck you.
Think you're better than me?
Charlie grips Daniel by the shirt.
Let me ask you.
Yeah, I do her, afro and all.
Daniel socks him in the face, sending him crumpling into a display of wigs. Charlie punches back, then rains down blows on his brother, sprawled on the floor. Daniel kicks him in the crotch. As Charlie doubles over, their father arrives.
Yeah.
What's going on here? Charlie and Daniel straighten. You hit your little brother? And you're the older one. Why are you always only blaming me? As Charlie hangs his head, Mr. Bay eyes Daniel.
Get some ice for your lip.
Later, cradling his head in his hand, Daniel ascends the store's staircase. He enters a sparsely furnished room containing a microwave on a stand, then opens a fridge. Leaning against a wall, he slides down to the floor. He presses a can of soda to his split lip. The view glides across to his reflection, captured in a mirror. In a flashback, a toddler celebrates his birthday with his family. Several items rest atop a blanket spread before him, including a ball, figurine, gavel, stethoscope, and piggy bank. Mrs. Bay insistently taps her finger near the stethoscope, then little Daniel presses his palm down. As their guests applaud, the Bays eye their son hopefully. Back in the present, Daniel presses the can to his lip with a pensive stare. His father arrives.
Are you okay? You forget about Charlie. The only thing that matters is your interview. When you go to good college, you become a doctor, you be success.
What if I don't want the same things you and Omar want, Papa?
Daniel, it is about the family name. It is about the honor for all of us.
But what about what I need?
America is all about I. You do not throw away your future.
Papa.
If you do not go to college, you're on your own. Arasa? Yeah, Papa.
Mr. Bay stares sternly at his son.
Yeah, Papa.
With a chastened look, Daniel meets his father's gaze for a moment, then grabs his suit jacket and steps away.
Daniel!
Charlie sits at the top of the stairs, hands folded before him. Daniel arrives and pauses for a moment before descending. With one cheek bruised, Charlie watches, his downturned mouth curling into a wistful smile. A view of the sprawling city shows trains moving along elevated tracks. Sitting on a bench seat as he rides, Daniel gazes out a window, a faraway look in his eyes. A montage includes various photos of the Bay family.
When my mother Min-Soo fell in love with my father, Dae-hoon, she didn't expect it would take them from South Korea to America. When my mom and dad learned that they were going to have a baby, they struggled with what to name it. You see, in America, the family name is called the last name. My father said it showed that Americans think the individual is more important than the family. But in Korea, the family name came first and told the entire history of your ancestry. When my brother was born, they picked an American name followed by a Korean personal name followed by the family name, Charles J. Won Bae. Then a couple years later, they named me, Daniel J. Ho Bae. So in the end, they chose both, Korean and American, American and Korean. That way, we would know where we were from and where we were going.
Charlie rings up a customer.
All right, thank you. Hi.
As he leans on the counter and eyes his phone, Natasha enters. She hesitates by the door before drawing closer.
You look great.
Thanks. Your boy's not here.
Yeah, I know. I need his number.
You need his number?
Mm-hmm.
From me?
That's what I just said.
Danny's number. From me.
You're gonna give it to me or not?
What's your deal? You have an Asian fetish or something?
I just have something really important that I need to tell him.
He scrutinizes her.
You really like him, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Charlie taps his finger on his phone. Lips pursed, he shoots Natasha a glance. With a shake of his head, he opens his contacts and sets his phone down.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. You're
welcome. Natasha picks up his phone, then takes out her own.
All right, great. Go.
Yep. All right. Hey. Don't break his heart.
Grinning, Natasha heads out. On a walkway, Daniel answers his phone.
Hello?
Hey.
Natasha?
Hi.
How'd you get my...
Your brother gave me your number.
My brother gave you my number?
But I have it, and it's me. I have some good news. Can you meet me?
Yeah. No, yeah. Where are you?
Under dusky skies, a suspension bridge spans a river connecting two boroughs. On a sidewalk silhouetted by the setting sun, Daniel and Natasha meet up and converse. She sways on her feet, arms spread. Now, a capsule of the Roosevelt Island tramway glides by, suspended by cables. On board, Daniel and Natasha continue their chat. He exhales on a window pane, then traces a heart with his finger.
This feeling begins just like a spark, tossing and turning inside of your heart, exploding in the dark, calling your name in the midnight hour.
A mere pinpoint on the horizon, the sun shines between skyscrapers. On the tram, Daniel pulls Natasha to her feet.
So many miles between us now.
They lean in close and embrace.
But you are always here with me.
They sway gently, their faces teasingly close. Smiling, Natasha draws back and studies Daniel, who lifts his hands to her face. He plants a small kiss on her mouth. Their lips meet in tentative motions, then linger. Daniel hoists Natasha up, his arms encircling her torso and her legs wrapped around his as the tram continues its journey. Under darkening skies, they stroll along a promenade.
You are always here with me.
Lightning round.
Okay.
What is your most treasured memory?
When we first got here,
mm-hmm.
My dad took us to see the fireworks at Coney Island. We ate fried dough, went on all the rides. Just kind of magical. Is that cheesy?
Daniel shakes his head.
He was different then.
Your dad?
Yeah. He's the reason we're here, but it's not even his fault. No, it's not his fault that ICE does these random raids. And he was working in the kitchen that day. 9 years here, then boom.
Man, I'm sorry.
It's all sorts of complicated.
Turning away, Natasha looks out over the river.
God, I love this city.
Her eyes scan the horizon, where a smattering of building lights illuminates the skyline. Traffic flows along a riverfront expressway in the shadow of the monolithic high-rises. The time on a Roosevelt Island clock reads 9:20. Hand in hand, Daniel and Natasha sit on a grassy hill, staring into one another's eyes. Their giddy expressions grow more serious. With a gentle hand, Daniel guides Natasha's face to his, and they kiss. He reaches down, caressing her thigh, while her arms rest draped around his shoulders. amorous, yet restrained. Their kissing continues. Lights glint from inside the Statue of Liberty's crown. On the distant horizon, the last vestiges of sunlight lend their orange-tinted hue to the sky. The view recedes further, but Lady Liberty remains the highest point on the skyline, her torch held aloft. In the Kingsley's apartment, Samuel sits perched on a windowsill, staring out. Daytime. On the grassy hill, two children race around. Nearby, Daniel cradles Natasha close as they sleep. Blinking awake, he turns to her. She slumbers on peacefully.
These sweetest moments, right, Don?
He gently touches her hair and cheek. Eyes fluttering open, Natasha smiles sweetly.
Good morning.
I could get used to waking up like this.
Thank you.
Lounging atop him, she rests her chin on her arm.
My bangs are probably everywhere.
She runs her hands through her hair.
Any more questions?
Kiss me.
They share a peck, then he lies back down.
What time is it? You don't want to miss your interview.
He checks his phone.
Oh, shit. 7:15.
Oh, we gotta go. Come on. Yeah.
They sprint off.
Yeah, it's interview time. Come on.
Careful.
Now, hand in hand, they head through the office plaza. They pause, staring up at Mr. Martinez's building. Daniel shakes his bowed head.
What?
She finishes buttoning his shirt.
I don't know.
You're going in there. You're gonna kill this interview, and I'll wait here for you until my appointment. You're good.
She pats him on the shoulders and takes out her phone, revealing 15 missed calls from Mom.
You okay?
I don't know. What if I have to leave?
You're not leaving.
How do you know that?
Because I know. The universe wants us to be together. You're not leaving, Natasha. Don't you see? That's what this whole thing is. Even your jacket, Deus Ex Machina. It's fate. So you have nothing to worry about.
Natasha nods and smiles.
Okay.
She takes him by the arm.
What? You're gonna be late. Go, 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 go.
She shoves him toward the entrance.
Oh, my God.
Go!
He remains in the revolving door.
I promise you're gonna be here.
I'll be here. We'll finish the questions when you get back.
I'm going.
He finally steps off. Natasha watches closely, then paces away. She answers her phone.
Hi, Mommy. No, I'm so sorry. I should have reached out. I'm safe, though.
Inside.
No. I graduated a long time ago. Class of 92. Are you a Queens boy?
Yep.
Yeah, me too. Your mother's name is Min Soo?
Yes.
Pretty.
Thank you.
Yeah. Soccer team?
Ford.
Mr. Martinez looks up.
Must be fast.
Daniel nods.
Asian Culture Club vice president?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Excellent interpersonal and customer service skills. What's that?
Yes, sir. My father owns a black hair care store. I work there part-time.
Any community service, that type of stuff?
Mm-hmm. I volunteer at the Children's Hospital in the Bronx twice a month. It's rewarding. I write poems with the patients. Takes their mind off of being sick.
Well, so you like to write, huh?
I do. As a hobby.
Yeah. No, I feel like doctors should all be well-rounded, but, you know, it's rare. So, when did you first know you wanted to be a doctor?
Mr. Martinez straightens some papers on his desk. and leans back in his chair.
Never? Is that an okay answer?
Yeah, I guess if it's honest.
It is.
All right, well, let's go with that then.
As the lawyer continues to peruse the young man's file, Daniel squirms in his seat.
My parents want me to be a doctor. I never wanted that. I want to be a poet.
So, why the hell do you want to go to Dartmouth?
My parents are immigrants. All they want is to give me and my brother a better life. That's all they ever wanted.
But what about what you want?
Doesn't that count for something?
I don't know.
Natasha arrives, phone in hand.
Okay, there's still a chance. Well, will you please just listen to me for once? All I'm saying is I'm here, I have this appointment, give me an hour.
Miss Kingsley, you're early.
Is he in there?
Yes, he is,
okay,
but...
great, I'll be home in an hour. Excuse me up now.
Your appointment's not until 10. Miss Kingsley,
we have a meeting.
So sorry for the interruption.
Excuse me, we're having a meeting here.
Natasha?
Daniel?
Destiny.
What's going on here?
This is... oh, my... I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
You're fine. It's fine. We were just finishing up.
No, we're not. We're just getting started right now.
Okay, can you tell me what happened with the judge?
I don't think you want to be talking about this in front of Mr. Bay right here.
You can say anything in front of him. Just tell me, can my family stay?
Arms at her sides, Natasha stares expectantly. Daniel turns to face Mr. Martinez, who nervously turns a pen in his hand.
No, I'm sorry.
He keeps his gaze on his desk.
So you're saying I have to leave today?
Natasha, if there was anything I could have done, I'm telling you, I would have done it.
You said you could fix it.
I promised to try, and I did. I really did.
Oh, your promises don't mean shit.
Look, your current political climate and the way they keep changing policies, I mean, they did all I could.
You know what's so messed up?
You said this wasn't gonna happen.
Natasha!
Hey, you didn't finish the interview.
Natasha only has a few hours left. I'm not wasting another second.
Don't you want the recommendation?
Not more than I want the girl.
Natasha heads through the revolving door to the plaza, wiping her eyes. Daniel sprints after her.
Natasha, come on. Natasha, please, wait, just wait.
I can't wait. I have to go home. You know, I have to pack. I have so much to do.
I can help.
No, my parents are there. Go back to your interview. Go back.
I don't care about Dartmouth. It doesn't matter to me the way that you do.
You met me yesterday. Get over it.
I don't want to get over it.
But you should.
I'm not going to get over it.
You should.
No. Here's what we're not gonna do. We're not gonna act like this isn't the worst day on earth, because it is, okay? But I'm coming home with you. I'm gonna see where you eat, where you sleep, where you live, and I wish I could have done it sooner, but now is better than never. Are you okay with that?
I just don't feel comfortable.
He envelops her in his tight embrace. He gives her a kiss on the brow, then looks into her eyes and strokes her cheek. Now, the sprawling city appears in a skewed perspective. The view tilts further, leaving the horizon stretched vertically, shifted from its axis. On a sidewalk, Natasha and Daniel walk hand in hand. Lifting her hand, he presses it to his lips. Now, in an apartment building, they stop in an upper floor hallway. Natasha folds her arms.
I look homeless.
You don't have to be nervous.
I'm meeting your parents.
Well, I mean, the good thing is, you can screw up all you want. Never gonna see him again.
Natasha opens the front door and leads Daniel inside the dimly lit apartment. Patricia and Peter pack a suitcase in the living room.
Pass him that one, huh? Yeah.
Lord, Natasha. Peter, go turn that damn music off. We didn't know when you'd come home.
Mommy, this is Daniel.
Sorry to meet you under these circumstances, Mrs. Kingsley. Mm.
They shake hands.
Dad, I'm sorry.
It's the reason why you're not coming home last night.
It's my fault.
That's a word, boy.
Samuel points firmly at Daniel, who takes a step back.
You've been up all night thinking about you, worried about you. And you come home with this stranger.
Daniel's not a stranger, he's my guest.
When you have your own home, you can have a guest. But this here's my home.
What makes this your home? A home is a place you fight for, and you don't even want to stay.
It's not simple, Tasha.
What is it?
I just wanted to give you all so much more than this.
Samuel takes a hard swallow and draws closer.
I love you. But we are leaving.
Eyes darting, Natasha nods. As father and daughter embrace, Patricia pulls Peter closer, while Daniel bows his head. Now, flanked by his parents, Peter stares glumly from the back seat of a yellow cab as it pulls away. Natasha watches, standing beside Daniel near another taxi. Shutting her back door, Daniel joins her on the other side. The taxi pulls from the curb onto the tree-lined street. Apartment buildings glide past the moving vehicle. Natasha gazes teary-eyed as reflections of leafy trees blur by her window. Seen from above, expressway traffic flows freely away from the Manhattan skyline and moves at a crawl in the lanes heading toward it. An air traffic control tower looms over a network of curving thoroughfares. A bird's-eye view of the airport shows jumbo jets outside hangars. Painted on the fuselage of one plane, colorful letters spell out Jamaica. Vehicles fill a parking lot adjacent to the hangars. As Natasha and Daniel exit their taxi in the airport drop-off zone, the cabbie sets her luggage on the sidewalk.
Thank you, sir.
Daniel unslings his backpack from his shoulder and tosses his suit jacket aside. He and Natasha stand face to face.
I don't know how to say goodbye.
I don't.
We still have one more test to go. The stare.
Nodding, Daniel fishes his phone from his pocket. The time shows 5 o'clock.
4 minutes. No talking.
He opens the timer app.
Ready?
She gives a slight nod. Then the time begins counting down from 4 minutes.
I'm not sure if we're supposed to hold hands during this part. But the hell with it.
He grips her hands in his. Natasha glances off for a moment. Then they lock eyes. Choking up, she swallows hard.
It's all right. I'm right here.
He holds her wrists in his firm yet gentle grip. Under Daniel's intense gaze, Natasha manages a bittersweet smile. Now, at dusk, a jumbo jet coasts over heavy cloud cover. Natasha gazes out wistfully from her window seat. She watches Peter asleep beside her, head resting on her shoulder. A dark shadow casts a pall over the cabin as she turns her attention back to the window. Meanwhile, aboard a commuter train, Daniel stares disconsolately out his own window.
Carl Sagan once said that human beings are like butterflies who flutter for a day and think it's forever
As shadow covers Natasha's face, Daniel writes in his notebook, "May every day be today."
Compared to the lifespan of the universe, our lives begin and end in a single day.
At night, traffic zips along a multi-level expressway.
I've come to understand it this way.
The sun peeks out between two tall buildings.
The stars aren't just balls of gas burning billions of miles away.
Twinkling lights illuminate the skyline.
They are also a reminder of the brief time we share on this planet.
In Jamaica, a teacher hands out tests to Natasha and her classmates.
At first, Daniel and I stayed in touch. But time and distance are the heart's natural enemies. Everyone we meet.
Daniel and his friend ride the subway.
Everyone we love.
They go over lines in Daniel's notebook.
How we got here.
A smiling Natasha visits an outdoor market with friends.
What path we choose.
Daniel walks the campus of Hunter College.
And who we choose to remember.
He stares off, a faraway look in his eyes.
They are all a part of our story.
Entering a restaurant kitchen, he puts on a white apron. Elsewhere, Natasha strides purposefully on another university campus.
But we cannot allow the story to be written for us.
Text on a book reads, "London, Northern Brixton University."
Because we don't have forever.
Natasha takes notes in the library.
Sometimes, all we have is a single day.
Scrolling through photos on her phone, she selects a selfie of her and Daniel, backlit by the sun. She smiles to herself and shakes her head as she recalls the day they met.
I'm Daniel.
You saved my life. Thank you.
More flashbacks include their conversation in the cafe, their stroll outside the museum, and their shared subway ride, with Natasha resting her head on Daniel's shoulder. On the grassy hill, they kiss, then Daniel traces the heart on the tram window. Outside the office building, he comforts the inconsolable Natasha. Back aboard the tram, they sway gently, silhouetted in a locked embrace. On the sidewalk outside the airport, they stare, taking one another in. Natasha's mouth trembles open. Daniel's lips part.
I love you, Daniel Bay.
Natasha smiles and nods. A tear rolls down from the corner of Daniel's eye.
I guess the experiment worked.
A small group of women heads past. Daniel and Natasha draw closer and kiss tenderly. Natasha withdraws her mouth from his and bites her lip. Staring longingly at Daniel, she starts to speak, then glances off. Meeting his gaze once more, she nods resignedly and mouths her goodbye. As she steps from view, Daniel watches helplessly. Cut to black. Words appear, 5 years later. An aerial view frames the dense cluster of skyscrapers crowding the southern tip of Manhattan. The Statue of Liberty stands silhouetted by flared sun rays. Sparse foot traffic passes the cafe with the green storefront. Natasha sits alone at a table, the ends of her curly hair tinted pink. She gazes around anxiously while a musician in the corner plays an acoustic guitar. She checks her phone before setting it on the table. The door opens and Mr. Martinez enters.
Sorry I'm late.
No, I just thank you for coming.
So you found your way back to New York City, huh?
It wasn't easy, as you know. But my student visa finally came through for grad school.
So what are you studying?
Astronomy. I'm actually flying to San Francisco tomorrow to start my PhD at Berkeley.
Thank you, Dr. Natasha Kingsley. Look at you.
Thanks. But I need to ask you a question.
Yeah, sure.
So the day my family got deported, there was a boy, Daniel Bay, who came to your office to interview for Dartmouth.
Okay.
You know, I haven't been able to find him anywhere. I mean, he's not online anymore. It's literally like he's vanished. And I was wondering if you have any way of contacting him.
No. I mean, when he ran out of my office, that was the last time I ever saw him. I'm sorry. I'll tell you something. You know why I remember that day? Well, because I had a million things to do that morning, and I had this accident, right? And I actually tried to convince the EMTs not to take me to the hospital, but I was glad they did.
Why?
Well, because my doctor became my wife.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I know.
Mr. Martinez gives a slight shrug.
So, you know, sometimes you can't control everything, and I don't know. Maybe just being open to fate, maybe that's a choice.
Maybe.
He checks his watch.
Good luck for everything. I mean that.
Thank you.
Okay.
They shake hands, then he takes his leave. Shoulders hunched, Natasha sinks back in her seat and heaves a deflated sigh.
That's it for me. We've got some more talent coming out, so just sit tight.
She puts on an overcoat, fishes some cash from a pocket, and lays it on the table near her coffee cup. She picks up her phone, then heads through the dimly lit cafe. Unnoticed in the shadows, Daniel takes off his apron as he makes his way around the counter. Natasha lingers at the exit for a moment before gazing off across the cafe. Standing behind a microphone in the corner, Daniel flips through a notebook. Natasha opens the door and smiles politely as a couple enters. She glances briefly their way, then starts to exit.
This is a poem I wrote about the sun.
Remaining inside, Natasha shuts the door and turns around, her incredulous look turning to a warm smile. As Daniel glances up, he meets her gaze from behind tortoiseshell glasses, his jaw slack. An uncertain expression replaces Natasha's broad smile.
Natasha.
Staring transfixed, Daniel sets his notebook down. They close the distance between them.
Wow. How?
I like your glasses.
I like their.
No. I leave tomorrow.
Daniel smiles, a lump in his throat.
I only need a day.
Well, I don't really have a day.
Give me an hour.
Natasha nods. She smiles, then they share a passionate kiss. The view pulls back from the storefront to the street as the couple's embrace continues.
I'm getting lucky like coins in a well. Goodbye to my haters, I'm wishing you well. This is my man, if you couldn't tell. This is our life and we living it well. Late nights in the city causing hell.
Far beyond the crowds gathered on the sidewalks, the distant low-lying sun shines brightly between high-rises. A title appears, The Sun is Also a Star. As heavy foot traffic moves beneath neon signs, the view fades to black. Directed by Rai Russo Young. Screenplay by Tracy Oliver. Based on the novel by Nicola Yoon. Produced by Leslie Morgenstein, PGA. Alisa Koplovitz Dutton, PGA. Executive producers Pamela Hirsch, Tracy Oliver. Co-producer Warren Fisher. Director of photography, Autumn Durald Arkapaw. Production designer, Wynn Thomas. Edited by Joe Landauer. Music by Herta Stefansdottir. Music supervisor, Warren Fisher. Costume designer, Deirdre Elizabeth Govan. Casting by Avi Kaufman, CSA. Yara Shahidi. Charles Melton. Benga Akinabe. Jake Choi. And John Leguizamo. Anais Lee, Miriam A. Hyman, Jordan Williams. Kyung Sim, Kathy Shim, Shamika Cotton, Camrish Johnson. An Alloy Entertainment production. Credits roll. Visit the MGM website at www.mgm.com. No person or entity associated with this film received payment or anything of value or entered into any agreement in connection with the depiction of tobacco products. The events, characters, and firms depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual firms is purely coincidental. Copyright 2019, Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, Inc. The Universe, including MGM retained territories. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, Inc. and Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. MGM retained territories. All rights reserved. Warner Brothers Entertainment, Inc. and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Pictures, Inc. are the authors and creators of this motion picture. For the purpose of copyright and other laws in all countries throughout the world. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by Deluxe with funding by MGM Pictures, voiced by Jedediah Barton. Gold film strips form a circle around a lion in mid-roar. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, a Warner Media company. www.warnerbros.com